The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Tell you one thing I can't do when I'm at the radio station. I can't go out and shoot baskets during the top of the hour news. I just had a breakthrough, Nicole.
See?
So I mentioned that on Sunday night, I hit one breakthrough. I was able to ride my bike for the first time since knee replacement. Yesterday was 6 weeks. And you have to have the range of motion to be able to do a full pedal crank. So I went for a bike ride Sunday night. I went for another one this morning. So I'm out riding my bike again. And then I heard one of my daughters and her significant other out shooting baskets during the top of the hour news. So I went out and I shot my first basket attempt since I got a new knee.
Okay, so you...
And I decided to try... What?
Go ahead. You decided to try. Go ahead and I'll finish.
I decided to try a three-pointer. They said, don't do that. They said, because the right knee is my takeoff knee when I shoot a three, and I'm still, you know, very weak there. I barely grazed the front of the rim from three-point land. But then I said, okay, I'm going to shoot 10 free throws. And I was just furious with myself because I'm a solid 85% free throw shooter. And these are my first ones since knee surgery. And I started off 2 for 6. And then I got furious at myself. And then I made the last 4. So I made 6 out of 10. So I'm now 60% with my new knee. That will get a lot better, I guarantee you. There's no way I'm going to be a 60% free throw shooter with this knee.
Hey, I believe it. And, you know, you often say, I told you so. Oh, I mean, that comes up a lot around here. And I'm going to say I told you so, because for 2 years you've been telling me then you won't get to play basketball. And if you're already shooting free throws and attempting three-point shots, then I'm pretty sure you're going to get back to it.
I probably will figure out a way.
See? Yeah.
But anyway, it was fun. It was fun to finally get back.
Don't you wish you
one of my great passions?
Done that a year ago.
Don't say, "Do I wish I had done it sooner?" Is that what you were going to say?
Oh yeah, no, I said it.
Why?
Because
why?
It's my "I told you so." You've been saying "I told you so" for 2 weeks now. I can say "I told you so" once.
As Cher would say, if I could turn back time, then maybe I would have gotten it sooner. Mm-hmm. But I got it when I was emotionally prepared to get it.
Yes.
And I got it, and now I'm making the most of it.
Hey, you know what? I'm just glad that the surgery wasn't scheduled for, a week ago or 3 weeks ago even. I'm glad you had it when you had it.
I've thought about that a lot. Now that elective surgeries are postponed, I would have been very sad and miserable if I had not gotten it done when I did. So I do feel very fortunate that I was able to get it done when I did. Okay, and with that as mere prelude, we got a lot of stuff to get to, a lot of new stuff. Let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
The Dow Jones with the biggest point gain in stock market history today, up more than 2,100 points, a massive gain after a couple of weeks of really bad news for investors, but they're still hopeful that there will be some kind of a bailout package this afternoon for businesses, for workers who are facing unemployment, and that we can get this economy. And plus, I think what the president said this morning was helpful as well, where he said, look, we want to be as mindful as we can about this health crisis. And that's why, he supports Jay Inslee shutting down our state for more than 2 weeks, as Inslee announced last night. But the president also said that we have to make sure that the cure is not worse than the disease. And what he means is, if curing or tamping down COVID-19 means that we destroy our economy and that our children and grandchildren see an America, a capitalist America that they don't even recognize because of unemployment and destroyed jobs. And, you know, coming out of the Great Depression, there were so many suicides. And you have to factor that in, that, you know, if people lose their ability to provide for their families, that takes an incredible emotional toll on people that sometimes is often leads to the gravest of decisions. And so the president said on he did a Fox town hall. And man, I will tell you, Donald Trump is the most visible president ever. The most transparent. He had that press conference yesterday, that coronavirus task force, and that went for almost an hour. And then he took questions for more than an hour after that. And that just has never happened on a daily basis where a president in the midst of a crisis takes that many questions from the press. And today he did a town hall and was taking questions from citizens that were worried about the economy, were worried about the health crisis. And he talked about opening the country back up.
Our country is not supposed to be, you know, it's not built to shut down. Our people are full of vim and vigor and energy. They don't want to be locked into a house or an apartment or some space. It's not for our country. We're not built that way. And I said, you know, I don't want the cure to be worse than the problem itself, the problem being obviously the problem. And, you know, you can destroy a country this way by closing it down, where it literally goes from being the most prosperous. I mean, we had the best economy in the history of our country 3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to shut it down. And then we're supposed to pay people not to go to work. We never had that. We used to pay people to go to work when we had...
But that's the bailout that is being talked about now. And he said it is his hope, it's not a deadline, but he wants to see if the shelter in place tamps down, you know, lowers the curve of COVID-19, and if that is enough so that they can start opening America for business by the middle part of...
I'd love to have it open by Easter. Okay, I would love to have it open by Easter. I will tell you that right now. I would love to have that. It's such an important day for other reasons, but I'll make it an important day for this too. I would love to have the country opened up and just raring to go by Easter.
So that is a goal. It is not a deadline, to be sure, because we have to see what happens with the spread of the virus between now and then, and if the things that we are doing now are helpful. So that was this morning in a town hall. And let me play one more from this morning, and then I have some brand new cuts for you as well. But he talked about some comparisons.
And you can't compare this to 1918, where close to 100 million people died. That was a flu, which is a little different, but that was a flu where if you got it, you had a 50-50 chance or very close of dying. I think we're substantially under 1% because the people that get better are not reporting. So we only know people that go to doctors and go to hospitals, and we're taking that. And we're still a little bit above 1%. When you add all of the people, the millions of people that have it, that get better, we're substantially less than 1%. And when they came to my office, don't forget, they were saying 3%, 4%, 5%. There's a very big difference. No, we have to put our country back to work.
So they will closely watch the mortality rate once we do better on the social distancing and the sheltering in place and all of that. And then they have to weigh that against getting the economy fired up again. And I will tell you that there was some very touching stuff that I saw last night about all of this, including the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick. And he's just a week shy of his 70th birthday. He has 5 grandkids. And he said he would rather take the chance of dying as somebody who would be at risk. He would rather take the chance of dying than to destroy our economy for his grandchildren. And I thought this was really powerful.
No one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. And that doesn't make me noble or brave or anything like that. I just think there are lots of grandparents out there in this country like me. I have six grandchildren. That what we all care about and what we love more than anything are those children. I don't want the whole country to be sacrificed. And that's what I see.
Boy, that gave me a lot of pause to think. You know, will I put myself at risk, a greater chance of death, if it means we could restart the economy sooner and that my children and my yet-to-be-born grandchildren would have a more recognizable America? So that is the almost impossible decision that our leaders are wrestling with right now. Now, brand new audio just in. The president also did a one-on-one with Bill Hemmer of Fox News. And he talked about, first of all, he talked about just, you know, the ridiculous people who are trying to make this into some kind of a racial thing.
They accused us of having done it through our soldiers. They said our soldiers did it on purpose. What kind of a thing is that? And that was their paper. That was a paper that's an organ for pretty much the top people. And I didn't like that. So I think, look, everyone knows it came out of China. But I decided we shouldn't make any more of a big deal out of it. I think I've made a big deal. I think people understand it.
So you,
but that,
you
that all began. That all began when they said our soldiers started it. Our soldiers had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it was, you know, propaganda that was trying to say the United States introduced this. But you know, there were people. You know, up until a few weeks ago, the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, they all called it either the China flu or the Wuhan virus. And I think almost everybody's gotten away from that now. I never called it those things. I called it Wuhan 19 from the very beginning. I called it China flu one time on Friday's show, but that was as we were going into a topic about whether that's racist when CNN had been doing it for weeks and weeks and weeks. But and again, it's such a non-issue that the major media tried focusing on because, I mean, there's a brand new poll just out this afternoon. Fox says that Trump's approval of how he's handling the COVID-19 virus, 60% approval. We had three polls yesterday that had them at 55% approval. And I'm talking about NBC, ABC, mainstream media that usually hates this guy. And the nation says, you know what? He's doing a pretty good job with this. And I think especially today, now that he's saying, and we are not going to just go all in and quarantine everybody for months if that destroys our economy, but we are going to find the right balance. Also, in that one-on-one interview with Bill Hemmer, he talked about a local Seattle company or Puget Sound
company. It's loaded to save corporations. I mean, maybe he would.
He's talking about the bailout bill and Boeing.
It's loaded to save corporations. I mean, maybe he was a businessman. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know. But it's loaded to save corporations. Does Joe Manchin want all of these or many of these companies to go out of business? We'll have an unemployment rate the likes of which nobody's ever seen before. We have to save these companies. These are companies that weren't in trouble 3 weeks ago, and now they're in trouble because of what happened. These are great companies. They're, you know, they're in some cases AAA companies. And we also, then we can go to another extreme, Boeing, which never had a problem in the history of their company virtually. It was like the perfect company. Then a year ago, you know the problem they had, and it was
how
in
much,
trouble.
How
and
much
this
money,
exacerbated
how
it.
How much money would you give Boeing?
Well, they're going to need a certain, they're going to come up with a request, and it's going to be really small compared to the numbers we're talking about. It's going to be a small amount of money, but we're not letting Boeing go out of business.
But
you know?
Boeing's not the only one.
No, but you have
so
others.
Many others
sure.
will line up.
And you have to help them temporarily. It's not going to be a, a long time temporarily. And they're going to pay interest, and they're going to probably give stock in their company to the people of our country, to the taxpayers of our country, to the citizens of our country. And it's going to be great.
Yeah, we need to get something out of it if there is a bailout. There's no question. And look, Jay Inslee has given Boeing the biggest tax breaks in the history of the state of Washington and has made ridiculous statements as to why. And, you know, we've exhaustively covered that story over the years. But we don't want to let businesses go out of biz. And the thing with Boeing, you know, they're closing all of their plants in the Puget Sound area starting tomorrow. And they've told all of their workers, you usually get 5 days of paid leave, but they're extending it to 10 and hoping that the plant shutdown will just be 2 weeks, but that all their workers can get paid for those 2 weeks. Well, if it does extend beyond that, Boeing workers don't deserve to not have a paycheck because of something that is completely out of their control. And so that's where it's reasonable if we step up as a nation and identify the companies. But it's not just the Boeings of the world. It's the little corner pizza shop and the bubble tea store. You know, what all of these little businesses, these cafes, these restaurants, the hotel workers, they don't deserve to be out of work. Nobody deserves that. We had the best economy ever until about 3 weeks ago. And now all of these people are thrown into turmoil. This is a good test of us as a nation. And we need to be there for our fellow Americans. And so we'll see what comes out if they get this bailout bill passed this afternoon. We still have not seen any final numbers on that. One other thing that I want to get to, I can't believe that, you know what, I might have to slide this to 2:30. I can't believe that I haven't gotten to the shutdown of the West Seattle Bridge yet, which was announced yesterday afternoon after I got off the air. Because what I've told you from the get-go is we have to make sure that in the midst of a crisis, and we are in the midst of a crisis right now, that we do not let politicians sneak through their agenda in the guise of it being part of a crisis. They told us yesterday that they had to close the West Seattle Bridge. They shut it down as of 7 o'clock last night. Now, this is a good time to have to do that because traffic is so much lighter right now. But I not only fear, but I am confident that there is a tremendous ulterior force at play with this West Seattle Bridge shutdown. It's one you need to know about. It's one that you and I must remain vigilant on. So let me take a quick time out. We'll check the news for you. I'll give you what's really going on with that West Seattle Bridge. We will get to awesome audio. We'll get you covered on all the breaking news that's coming in. Like every single day of our lives these days, it's a very, very busy news afternoon. Really appreciate you being here with us, and we continue to muddle through this together here on the Dory Monson Show. Kind of digging the groove of this bump. Sean, what do we got here?
Yeah, this is someone called Milo, and the song is Sun Worshipper. Figured it was a nice, cool jam to come in with.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Reminds me a little bit of Me and Mrs. Jones.
Ah.
You know that song?
I do know that song.
You know that one?
Yes.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
We sure do, Dory. You should have seen Nicole's face when I said that. Oh, my God.
You ain't my Mrs. Jones, Sean. I hate to tell you.
Oh, I'm glad you told me.
I only got one Mrs. Jones, and that's Mrs. Monson.
I'm Pool Boy
Jones.
I'm
a one... woman, man. Mm-hmm. What? What? Did you say pool boy?
Yeah, I'm pool boy, what? Jones.
I don't know what that means.
I'm just making a joke, Corey. Didn't work.
Why
Move
did
on.
You take a, why did you take a cool jam mm-hmm. and make it confusing and uncomfortable for me?
Oh, I think you did that all by yourself.
How? How? Because his cool jam bump reminded me of me and Mrs. Jones, and then I clarified for everybody that unlike the Billy yeah. Paul,
so much
who I believe
here.
Is the singer of me and Mrs. Jones, unlike Billy Paul, I'm not seeking an affair because I'm a one-woman man, and then all of a sudden I hear something about a pool boy. Oh, this is good. Now this... If you have to be quarantined at home, if you have to shelter in place, this is what you should be listening to. Can I bring it up a little full, Sean? I might have to sing.
Me and Mrs. Jones.
And Mrs. Jones. I think I add to it.
We got a thing.
We got a thing. Going on. How's my voice?
It's fantastic. And with the tiny bit of delay, it's like you're his background singer.
Oh, so it's almost like an echo?
Yes.
Go now. Let me just do one more verse. Bring it up. Drown me out. Every day. At the same cafe. 6:30.
No one knows
she'll be there.
Holding hands.
Holding hands. Making all kinds of plans.
While the jukebox plays
our favorite song. Me and Mrs. Jones.
Oh my gosh. People are texting.
Is that Adam?
Don't give up your day.
Is that out of my key?
I'm wasting my time listening to this.
What?
Those are the texts coming in, Dory.
Get to the bridge. That's what one person just texted. Ah, that's another text.
But it's much too strong to let it go now.
From the 360.
I kind of fancied myself.
We're what? Waiting for you to get to the point about the bridge, Dory.
Oh,
we're bored and renting Dory. Is Dory on drugs? All the weed stores are open.
I've been sober as a judge for 4 weeks now. Crying out loud. Dory, stop. It's the Vicodin singing. I haven't taken Vicodin for 4 weeks. Everybody's, me! Mrs. Jones!
Okay.
Mrs. Jones! Mrs. Jones! Mrs. Jones!
We got a thing.
About that bridge.
I kind of fancied myself a young Billy Paul when I was about 11 years old. This is probably when this song came out, 10 or 11. I was pimping around Ballard. Thinking really? About all... What?
Oh, I said, really? You were pimping around Ballard.
No, is that what I said?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like you said, pimping around Ballard.
Yeah, what did you say?
I can't believe. Mm-hmm.
What'd you say?
I can't believe that I would have said something
Come on,
like that. Can I get to the bridge, please?
The bridge of the song? That's what I literally thought the listener meant was the bridge of the song.
No!
The actual bridge.
Wait.
Mrs. Jones. Man, you are real bad at that.
If we wait one more minute, we'll have played the whole entire song on the air with Dory singing.
That'd be a horrible mistake. We'll cut the song right now, so I'm not even tempted. Thank you.
Phew.
Stop, you'll tempt me. You'll drag me back into it. Okay, bring it back up.
Talk with you at the same place.
It's same time.
30 seconds, baby.
No, no, drop it. Cut it.
My
cut
aunt
it.
Just texted me. He's on something for sure.
I'm not on anything. You know what I'm on? Life. I love being with my family. Oh. I love being isolated.
By the way, Trump's talking now. We're going to go to him. So you just blew the bridge story.
Are you kidding me?
No, that's on you.
Hold on. Let me pull up the source real quick.
Okay, well, Sean's pulling up the source. Let me read one text from the 206.
Better hurry.
Yes! Keep going, Dory! I'm sorry, that's the only text I saw. Awesome job, Dory, from the 360.
Oh, I take okay, that back. He's not up there yet. They just ran in and told me he was up there, but he's not. He's almost up there.
For the love. For
get to the bridge
love.
Story okay. while we still have time.
Can I please get to the bridge story? Okay, here we go. So the West Seattle Bridge, let me tell you what's really going on here. So yesterday you had Jenny Durkin, Lorena Gonzalez from the Seattle City Council. They announced that they are shutting down the West Seattle Bridge starting at 7 o'clock last night, and they're going to shut it down for weeks because there are cracks in it. The director of Seattle's DOT, Sam Zimbabwe, if that is his real name, he was also there. And Jenny Durkin talked about that it's just not safe to drive on the West Seattle Bridge.
There's concerns that the West Seattle high-rise bridge cannot safely support vehicular traffic at this time.
And Sam Zimbabwe says that they want to keep people safe.
Extent and the type of cracking that we've seen has concerned our structural engineering experts to the point where removing live load traffic from the bridge is in the best interest of public safety at this point.
Okay, what an absolute failure of leadership if this story was to be taken at face value, which it's not, and I'll get to that in a second. But the Seattle city budget is double the city budget of Boston, which is the same size. We have half as many cops as Boston, but with double the budget, we cannot keep up the most basic infrastructure that carries 100,000 cars a day. If that is so, then Jenny Durkin and Sam Zimbabwe, if that is his real name, they are the worst leaders imaginable. But here's what's really going on here. Because I've heard some theories that most of which I believe are incorrect. Here's what's going on. What they desperately want is to continue to pursue their dream of a carless Seattle. And one of the ways they could take a quantum leap in that direction is if they say, it's going to be too expensive to repair the West Seattle Bridge. And because of the slope of the high rise of the bridge, light rail can't get up and over the existing structure. So here's what we're going to propose. And just mark my words. Write down this date. And mark my words, when this comes, I don't know if it's going to be a week from now, a month from now, or a year from now, but here's what's coming. They're going to tell us that they need to build a brand new multimodal bridge that will not focus on cars because we have to get away from the 20th century vision of cars. And we'll build a bridge that has dramatically reduced capacity. We'll make it almost impossible for people to get in and out of West Seattle by car. They will build light rail on this brand new magic carpet bridge that they're going to build out. And they are going to make life a living hell for people who live in West Seattle. And for people like Dow Constantine, they said, well, the low bridge that still people can use, but not the public. It's for first responders and the like. And they're going to say that
Trump's
bridge
talking.
Is, yep, okay.
Let's go.
They're going to say that Dow Constantine, with his security detail, can still cross that, but the average taxpayer cannot. Donald Trump, live coronavirus briefing, Cairo Radio. We take you there to the White House.
avoiding large gatherings and hand washing and all of the other things that everybody knows they're supposed to be doing. Ultimately, the goal is to ease the guidelines and open things up to very large sections of our country as we near the end of our historic battle with the invisible enemy. It'll go on for a while, but we win. We win. I said earlier today that I hope we can do this by Easter. I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality. We'll be meeting with a lot of people to see if it can be done. Easter is a very special day for many reasons. For me, for a lot of our friends, that's a very special day. And what a great timeline this would be. Easter as our timeline, what a great timeline that would be. My first priority is always the health and safety of the American people. I want everyone to understand that we are continuing to evaluate the data. We're working with the task force and making decisions based on what is best for the interest of our fantastic country. In order to defeat the virus, we must continue to be very strong. Your resilience and spirit has been inspiring to everyone. Right now, this virus is attacking 149 countries, but everybody looks to us and they're watching us. And I'm very proud to be your president. I can tell you that. There's tremendous hope as we look forward and we begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Stay focused and stay strong, and my administration and myself will deliver for you as we have in the past. Let me provide you an update on critical preparations and supplies in our war on the virus. Through FEMA, the federal government is distributing more than 8 million N95 respirators, 14 million surgical masks, and many, many millions more under order, and they'll be arriving soon. 2.4 million face shields, 1.9 million surgical gowns, 13.5 million gloves, and more than 4,000 ventilators to the areas of greatest need have already been sent, and we have 4,000 being delivered to New York. The federal government is using every resource at its disposal to acquire and distribute critical medical supplies. The core element of this strategy is my executive order authorizing the use of the Defense Production Act, which has, as you know, already been activated actually a long time ago, quite a long time ago. Private companies are heeding our call to produce medical equipment and supplies because they know that we will not hesitate to invoke the DPA in order to get them to do what they have to do. It's called leverage. You don't have to use it from the standpoint of actually it's been activated, but you don't have to use it. But the threat of it being there is great leverage, and companies are doing as we ask, and companies are actually even better than that. They're coming through, and they're calling us, and it's been really something to see. This morning, Ford, 3M, General Electric Healthcare are making tremendous numbers. They've already started respirators, ventilators, and face shields. They're working together. We didn't have to exercise or utilize the DPA in any way. The fact that we have it helps, but we didn't have to, and for the most part, we won't have to. We're receiving full cooperation from companies with the understanding that the federal government stands ready to compel cooperation if need be. We haven't found that to be the case. It's been really amazing to see these big, strong, powerful, in some cases very small companies, family-owned companies, step up and make a lot of great product for what we're going through and what we will continue to be going through for a while. The Army Corps of Engineers and the National Guard are building 4 hospital facilities in New York City at the Javits Center, which will be operational very soon. They've already started. In addition, they're building 4 separate medical facilities in different parts of the state. We're dealing with Governor Cuomo on that. So you're going to have 4 hospitals and 4 medical facilities at the highest level, too. Really incredible facilities. Temporary, but incredible. We're also deploying the U.S. Navy hospital ship, and that will be arriving in New York Harbor in the not-too-distant future. It's finishing its maintenance. They're doing a very big maintenance, and what we did is we condensed it very seriously. And as you know, the other hospital ship, and these are incredible ships, it's already on its way to Los Angeles. So we're in frequent contact with state and local officials and getting a lot of work done. We're likewise building hospitals in Los Angeles. We're working also the state of Washington. We're working with the governor of the state of New Jersey, building a medical facility, a hospital facility, and doing a lot of work. I want to thank the people from FEMA, the great people from FEMA, and also the Army Corps of Engineers. Secretary Mnuchin and the members of my administration continue to work closely with Congress. I'm pleased to report that we are working to pass the biggest and boldest financial relief package in American history. Senators will soon, hopefully, vote on a $2 trillion bill that will deliver direct cash payments to struggling Americans. No fault of their own. This came out of nowhere. Nobody can imagine this even happened. But it's not their fault. We want to protect, and we will, all of the things that a person needs protected and a family needs protected. We're working on job retention loans for small businesses and extended unemployment insurance for laid-off workers. The legislation will also include billions of dollars for additional resources for our, and really heroic, these are incredible, doctors, nurses, brave, and hospitals, as well as support for hard-hit industries such as the airline industry and the cruise ship industry, which employ tremendous amounts of people and obviously serve very important functions beyond that, with very tough protections for the American taxpayer. The loans will be very secure, and they will be very profitable, and at the same time, they'll bridge. They call them bridge loans in many cases. They'll be bridging these companies back into very good health. Some of them are very important companies that 4 weeks ago didn't have a problem. I'm also confident that the Democrats will do the right thing. I feel very confident. They're working very hard together right now, Republicans and Democrats, and they're getting very close to a very fair deal and a great deal for the people of our country. Today, as you probably saw, the Dow surged over 2,100 points. That's the all-time record, history of the exchange. This is very encouraging, and I think part of the reason is they are looking at what is close to being passed, and I think a very big part of it is they see that we want to get our country open as soon as possible. They see we're working very hard on that. That's a very big factor, I think, in today's historic gain. The legislation developed in the Senate is the first step to restoring confidence and stability to America's economy as we look ahead to the time when we can carefully and responsibly reopen our country for business, and we hope that's going to be very soon. I want to assure Americans that we have a team of public health experts. You've gotten to know them as well as I know them. They're great people, incredible, talented. They love our country. Also, economists and other professionals working to develop a sophisticated plan to reopen the economy as soon as the time is right. One based on the best science, the best modeling, and the best medical research there is anywhere on earth. Our great people have been, especially when it comes to our public health experts and officials, have been helping other countries, dealing with other countries, constant touch with other countries, helping them out, because many of them have never seen anything like what's happening. But our decision will be based on hard facts and data as to the opening. I'm also hopeful to have Americans working again by that Easter, that beautiful Easter day. But rest assured, every decision we make is grounded solely in the health, safety, and well-being of our citizens. This is a medical crisis. This isn't a financial crisis. But it's a thing that nobody has seen for many, many decades, nothing like this. Marshaling our economic strength is a key feature of defeating the virus, producing the materials, supplies, and equipment that we need, and they're doing a really fantastic job.
We're helping the governors. We had a conference call the other day with the governors, and we allowed the press to join us on the call, and the spirit between us and the governors has been really great. We should never be reliant on a foreign country for the means of our own survival. I think we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot. This crisis has underscored just how critical it is to have strong borders and a robust manufacturing sector. For 3 years, we've embarked on a great national project to secure our immigration system and bring back our manufacturing jobs. We brought back many jobs, record numbers of jobs. And this really shows, this experience shows how important borders are. Without borders, you don't have a nation. Our goal for the future must be to have American medicine for American patients, American supplies for American hospitals, and American equipment for our great American heroes. Now both parties must unite to ensure the United States is truly an independent nation in every sense of the word. Energy independence, we've established that. And something incredible that we've established. We're energy independent, manufacturing independence, economic independence, and territorial independence enforced by strong sovereign borders. America will never be a supplicant nation. We will be a proud, prosperous, independent, and self-reliant nation. We will embrace commerce with all, but we will be dependent on none. Above all, we know that the best thing for our economy and the world right now is a very, very powerful victory over the virus. Every day, the American people are showing the unity and resolve that has always defined the character of our nation. In New York, citizens are using 3D printers to make hundreds of face shields. They're making them by the hundreds. In Texas, businesses and churches are uniting to collect gloves and thermometers for hospitals. In the selfless actions of our amazing citizens, we're seeing enduring strength of our magnificent nation, a spirit that can never be broken, and a victorious future that can never be denied. It never will be denied. Now, what I'd like to do is perhaps ask a person who has really established herself as maybe the world's great expert on what she does. If I could ask Deborah to come forward and say a few words, and then I'll ask Tony to come up and speak, and then our vice president, and then we'll take a few questions, and we'll do it quickly, and we'll probably see you again tomorrow. So, Deborah, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I think those of you who heard the town hall, we are continuing to accelerate testing at a record rate. We now have 370,000 tests that have been done, majority of those over 220,000 in the last 8 days, which those of you who have been tracking the South Korea numbers put us equivalent to what they did in 8 weeks that we did in 8 days. This was made possible because of the HHS team working together, bringing together the strength of the FDA with the CDC and under the leadership of Secretary Azar. We're very proud of those numbers, but we know that we have to do more, and we continue to accelerate in testing to ensure that those who need the test are tested first and have access. As we talked about yesterday, we're working on the ability for people to take their own sample. That does not mean home testing. That means taking your own sample in the front of your nose with available swabs into normal saline that can be transported to the laboratories. That will allow and free up all of the drive-throughs to be very sparing on PPE, because you'll be able to do that with gloves rather than the full PPE outfits. This will allow for more of that PPE to be dedicated to our hospitals. I think those of you who are tracking this epidemic closely, like I am, you will begin to see that there is encouraging results coming out of Italy. We are impressed by the decreases that are seen in mortality, the number of people succumbing to this illness, and the number of new cases. our new cases will continue to surge because we're still working on our backlog, although we will be in touch with the laboratories after this press conference to really find out how many are still in backlog and how many were run in the last 24 hours. Until we can get into a 24-hour cycle, we're going to have disproportional number of new cases compared to the actual new cases, and we will let you know when we've reached that equilibrium. Finally, and I know Dr. Fauci will talk about this further, we remain deeply concerned about New York City and the New York metro area. About 56% of all the cases in the United States are coming out of that metro area, and 60% of all the new cases are coming out of the metro New York area, and 31% of the people succumbing to this disease. It means, because they still are at the 31% mortality compared to the other regions of the country, that we can have a huge impact if we unite together. This means, as in all places, they have to be following the presidential guidelines that were put out 8 or 9 days ago, and this will be critical. But to everyone who has left New York over the last few days, because of the rate of the number of cases, you may have been exposed before you left New York. And I think, like Governor DeSantis has put out today, everybody who was in New York should be self-quarantining for the next 14 days to ensure that the virus doesn't spread to others, no matter where they have gone, whether it's Florida, North Carolina, or out to far reaches of Long Island. We are starting to see new cases across Long Island that suggest people have left the city. So this will be very critical that those individuals do self-quarantine in their homes over these next 14 days to make sure they don't pass the virus to others based on the time that they left New York. So if they've already are 4 days out, then it's just 10 more days. So I thank you if you help get that message out to others. Dr. Fauci?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I want to just talk very briefly about two or three things. First, the issue of testing and how that has really changed the complexion of the approach that we're going to be able to take. Testing was an issue. We had many questions of testing in this room for a number of times. Now that we literally have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of testing out there, there are a few things that we can do with that. One of the things is that when we make policy about what we're going to be doing with the rest of the country, particularly those areas that are not hot spots, we need to know what the penetrance of infection is there. So we need to put a light on those dark spots that we don't know. We have to act policy-wise on data, and we're going to be getting more data, a lot more data. The other thing is that the areas...
You are listening to Dr. Anthony Fauci. This is the White House Coronavirus Task Force Daily Briefing, and we are bringing it to you live here on 97.3 Cairo FM, K-I-R-O FM, Tacoma, Seattle. Tom and Curly will pick it up after the task force is done. Have a great afternoon.
The contact tracing. When you have a big outbreak, it's tough to do anything but mitigation. We have an opportunity now that we have the availability of testing to do that. So you're going to be hearing more about how we can inform where we're going, particularly because we have the ability to test. The second thing is I just want to reiterate what Dr. Berg said about New York. It's a very serious situation. They've suffered terribly through no fault of their own. But what we're seeing now is that, understandably, people want to get out of New York. They're going to Florida. They're going to Long Island. They're going to different places. The idea, if you look at the statistics, it's disturbing. About 1 per 1,000 of these individuals are infected. That's about 8 to 10 times more than in other areas, which means when they go to another place, for their own safety, they've got to be careful, monitor themselves. If they get sick, bring it to the attention of a physician, get tested. Also, the idea about self-isolating for 2 weeks will be very important, because we don't want that to be another seeding point to the rest of the country, wherever they go. And then thirdly, just one comment about drugs and the testing of drugs. You know, you heard yesterday about drugs being out there that physicians, on an off-label way, can prescribe it to give people hope of something that hasn't been definitively proven to work, but that might have some hope. I don't want anybody to forget that simultaneously with our doing that, We're also doing randomized clinical trials on a number of candidates. You've heard about candidates, but there are others in the pipeline where we'll be able to design the study, and over a period of time, particularly since we have so many infections, we'll be able to determine definitively, are these safe and are they effective? We're talking about remdesivir, other drugs, immune sera, convalescent sera, monoclonal antibodies. All of these are in the pipeline now, queuing up to be able to go into clinical trial. So I'll stop there and talk.
Thank you, Tom. Good job. Larry, how about just a quick few minutes on how we're doing over the hill?
Thank you, sir. We're gaining great progress on this phase three legislation. Negotiations continue. We've had continued reports. I've been up there with Secretary Mnuchin. Secretary Mnuchin continues today with Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, checking in with the President. They're getting closer and closer. They expect to vote as soon as possible. I just want to walk through a couple of key points. This legislation is urgently needed to bolster the economy, provide cash injections and liquidity, and stabilize financial markets to get us through a difficult period, a difficult and challenging period in the economy facing us right now, but also to position us for what I think can be an economic rebound later this year. We started the year very strong, and then we got hit by the coronavirus in ways that probably nobody imagined possible. We're dealing with that as best we can. This package will be the single largest Main Street assistance program in the history of the United States. The single largest Main Street assistance program in the history of the United States. Phase two delivered the sick leave for individuals, hourly workers, families, and so forth. Phase three, a significant package for small businesses. Loan guarantees will be included. We're going to take out expenses and lost revenues. As the President said, eligibility requires worker retention. We will maintain the people eligible, will maintain their payrolls during this crisis period. And on top of that, we will have direct deposit checks of roughly $3,000 for a family of four, and that will bridge to enhanced, plussed up unemployment insurance benefits that will essentially take those up to full wages. This is one, two, three, four. You know, a strong workforce requires strong business. You can't have a job without a business to work for. And the hope here is that the companies that were operating very well at the beginning of the year when the economy was in good shape, we will help them and their employees get through this tough period so they will come out the other side, let's say this later this spring or summer, and will continue their operations. That's the key point. Now, don't forget, there's income tax deferrals for individuals and corporations without interest and penalties. There are student loan interest and principal deferrals without any penalties. And finally, I want to mention the Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Fund. That will be replenished. It's important because that fund opens the door for Federal Reserve firepower to deal a broad-based way throughout the economy for distressed industries, for small businesses, for financial turbulence. You've already seen the Fed take action. They intend to take more action. And in order to get this, we have to replenish the Treasury's emergency fund. It's very, very important. Not everybody understands that. That fund, by the way, will be overseen by an oversight board and an inspector general. It will be completely transparent. So the total package here comes to roughly $6 trillion, $2 trillion direct assistance, roughly $4 trillion in Federal Reserve lending power. Again, it will be the largest Main Street financial package in the history of the United States. Liquidity and cash for families, small business, individuals, unemployed, to keep this thing going. We're heading for a rough period, but it's only going to be weeks, we think. Weeks, months, not going to be years, that's for sure. And hopefully pave the way for continued economic recovery after this crisis. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I've been hearing that voice for so many years, like 30 years or more, maybe. And it's a great voice, and it's a great man. So, Larry Kudlow, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to say that that package, and we went over parts of it, but pretty big parts, it really sets us up to, I think, even supersede where we were a month ago. I think we can get up there quickly, and I think it allows us to supersede. It allows us to help these great companies that need help, like Boeing, which is, you know, had a problem. And then on top of that problem, it had the virus come in. But we'll be helping Boeing. We'll be helping the airlines. We'll be helping the cruise lines. We'll be doing a lot of things. And the money will all come back to us, and it'll come back to us in a very strong form. And before we take some questions, I'd like to ask our great vice president to say a few words, if you would not, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The White House Coronavirus Task Force met again today. And on behalf of the President of the United States, everyone on our team, and our state leaders, let me just say thank you, America. People across this country, businesses large and small, are responding to the threat of the coronavirus in ways that are deeply inspiring. People are acting on the President's 15 days to slow the spread, and it is making a material difference. Our experts standing beside us told us that if every American, regardless of whether you're in an area that's impacted by an outbreak of the coronavirus or not, if every American would embrace these guidelines, that we could significantly reduce the number of Americans that would contract the coronavirus and protect the most vulnerable. And as the President reflected earlier, tens of millions of Americans are doing just that, and we're grateful. The focus of our task force, of course, is to slow the spread, to promote mitigation strategies. Beyond that, though, the President has us focus on testing and on supplies and making sure that those that are enduring the symptoms of the coronavirus and those who are ministering to them, our extraordinary healthcare workers, have the support that they need. In the category of supplies, you just heard Dr. Birx indicate that we've made great progress. We have done more tests in the last 8 days than were done in the previous 8 weeks, and it's because of the public-private partnership that the President forged with commercial labs. And I would encourage people around the country to remind your family members and friends that if you don't have symptoms, don't get a test. We want to make sure people who are having symptoms, who have a concern, have the ability to be tested and to have those tests processed. We're continuing to urge all county hospitals, all labs around the country, to report to the CDC all the results of the test, as it'll give these experts around us the ability to continue to advise the President on best practices. As I mentioned, we all continue to follow the outbreak around the country and the test results. But as several have mentioned, we're particularly focused on New York. The reality is the New York metro area was 60% of the new cases in the country. And specifically, as a layperson, I can tell you that the infection rates are roughly 1 in 1,000 in the New York City metropolitan area, where they are 0.2% per 1,000 or 0.1% per 1,000 in places like Washington State. It is the reason why today the White House Coronavirus Task Force is calling on any American, first and foremost, if you're in the New York City metropolitan area or elsewhere, to take the guidelines that we issued and avoid non-essential travel. But for anyone in the New York metropolitan area who has traveled, our task force is encouraging you to monitor your temperature, be sensitive to symptoms, and we are asking anyone who has traveled out of the New York City metropolitan area to anywhere else in the country to self-isolate for 14 days. We have to deal with the New York City metropolitan area as a high-risk area. And for that reason, we're taking these steps and asking for the cooperation of the American people. Because of the spread in New York City, we will continue to surge resources. The President has described this. FEMA is coordinating with New York State for the arrival of the USS Comfort in just a matter of a few short weeks. Over the next 24 hours, more than 4,000 additional ventilators will be delivered to New York State as well. New York State has prioritized three alternative medical facilities, and at the president's direction, the Army Corps of Engineers is working on plans to build those facilities out. You've heard the president speak about the Javits Center, the addition of 1,000 beds, and we'll continue. I want the people of New York City and the greater New York City area to know that we're with you. We're going to continue to provide resources to support your state and local officials as they confront the spread of the coronavirus in that great city. On the subject of supplies, we had team meetings today at FEMA, which is working on identifying the critical personal protective equipment and ventilators. At this point, FEMA informs us today that they are distributing 7.6 million N95 respirator masks, more than 14 million surgical masks, and FEMA has already shipped 73 pallets of personal protective equipment to New York, 36 pallets of personal protective equipment to the state of Washington. We'll be meeting again tonight. As you know, the president stood FEMA's National Response Center up, and they are in the lead for the approach to the coronavirus, which is locally executed, state managed, and federally. Continue to surge those resources and make sure that they're available. One last word, if I may. The president reflected on the response businesses around the country have brought to this moment. It truly is extraordinary. Now, the president did initiate the Defense Production Act last week, but as the president has reflected many times, we will use the Defense Production Act if we need it to mandate production of critical supplies. But so far, no one has said no. And in fact, we see industries stepping up. The president mentioned Ford Motor Company working with 3M and GE Health to expand production of medical supplies. We heard that McDonald's is now offering curbside delivery to truckers who are unable to use the drive-through to pick up a Big Mac. And I spoke today, and the president spoke last week with Tim Cook of Apple. And at this moment in time, Apple went to their storehouses and is donating 9 million N95 masks to healthcare facilities at all across the country and to the national stockpile. There is a level of generosity that I know is inspiring to the president, and it's truly inspiring to all of us who are working on the White House Coronavirus Task Force. The president's made it clear that he hopes, in weeks, not months, to be able to open up the country. But let me make one last encouragement to every American. We will get to that day quicker if every American will put into practice the president's coronavirus guidelines for our nation. 15 days to slow the spread. If every American will do this, I have no doubt that we will slow the spread, we will protect our most vulnerable, and we will heal our land. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, you just reiterated that you hope to have the country reopened by Easter. You said earlier you would like to see churches packed on that day. My question is, you have two doctors on stage with you. Have either of them told you that's a realistic timeline?
I think we're looking at a timeline. We're discussing it. We had a very good meeting today. You know, if you add it all up, that's probably 9 days plus another 2.5 weeks. It's a period of time that's longer than the original 2 weeks. So we're going to look at it. We'll only do it if it's good. And maybe we do sections of the country. We do large sections of the country. That could be too. But no, we're very much in touch with Tony and with Deborah on everything
Easter?
We're doing.
Who suggested
that? I just thought it was a beautiful time. It would be a beautiful time, a beautiful timeline.
So that was based on the data?
It was based on a certain level of weeks from the time we started. And it happened to arrive. Actually, we were thinking in terms of sooner. I'd love to see it come even sooner, but I just think it would be a beautiful timeline. John?
Mr. President, if you look at what we've just seen in the last day or so, you've seen the number of known coronavirus cases in the country double in just 2 days. Another 95 people have died just in the last 24 hours. New York's governor is saying this is spreading like a bullet train across the country. And the governor of Louisiana is saying that his state may not be able to handle the cases that they're facing by early April. So what are you seeing in all of this that leads you to think that we could reopen by Easter or even earlier?
Sure. We're working with all of them. We can be talking about large sections of our country, because there are sections of our country that you didn't talk about that are doing unbelievably well. They have very little incidence or problem, very small numbers. It's very possible that they won't be ever subject to what's happening in New York. New York is definitely a hot spot. There's no question about it. And you know what we're doing in New York to try and help. And I think we're doing an incredible job. We're going to have the hospitals up quickly, the medical centers also quickly. But we'll just have to see. We have to follow it. We have to see. We're going to look at that curve. We're going to see when it starts coming down. And we'll do the best job that can be done. John, please.
Question for you, Mr. President, Dr. Fauci, if we could. Just when looking at this idea of an Easter timeline, and I don't know that's probably flexible, what are the metrics by which you will make the decision as to whether you can say, yes, we can open up this area of the country, or no, we can't open up that area? I mean, will you be looking at disease numbers? Will you be looking at possible containment, isolation?
I think we'll be looking at a lot of things. We'll also be looking, again, at very large portions of our country. And I will be guided very much by Dr. Fauci and by Deborah and by some of the other professionals that work with both of you. And we're going to see what will be. But that would certainly be, I think that's a goal that perhaps can happen, or at least for a very large portion of our country.
Dr. Fauci, since the president said you and Dr. Birx and others will be guiding him in making the decision, where are you now with this timeline, 19 days from now?
So I mean, that's really very flexible. We just had a conversation with the president in the Oval Office talking about, you know, you can look at a date, but you've got to be very flexible. And on a literally day-by-day and week-by-week basis, you need to evaluate the feasibility of what you're trying to do. And, John, you asked for, you know, what kind of metrics, what kind of data. When you look at the country, I mean, obviously no one is going to want to tone down things when you see what's going on in a place like New York City. I mean that's just, you know, good public health practice and common sense. But the country is a big country, and there are areas of the country, and I refer to this in my opening remarks, that we really need to know more about what the penetrance is there. So if we do the kind of testing what we're doing, and testing will always be associated by identification, isolation, and contact tracing, and you find after a period of time that there are areas that are very different from other areas of the country, you may not want to essentially treat it as just one force for the entire country, but look at flexibility in different areas. So I think people might get the misinterpretation. You're just going to lift everything up, and even somebody's going like that. That's not going to happen. It's going to be looking at the data. And what we don't have right now that we really do need is we need to know what's going on in those areas of the country where there isn't an obvious outbreak. Is there something underneath the surface that says, wait a minute, you better be careful and really clamp down? Or what looks there that you don't really have to be as harsh as you are in other areas? So it's looking at information that up to this point, John, we never had. So it's a flexible situation.
Was New York becoming our world? Is New York becoming the epicenter?
Well, it certainly is by far the, if you call it hot, if you call it any word you want to use, it is at a level that, I was speaking to Tony before, it's a level that no place else is close. It's very unfortunate. You know, one of the things that's happened that we've done, I think, a really good job on, I think that it's something special what's happened is, I learned from Dr. Birx a little while ago when she said, I learned it actually this afternoon, in 8 days, because we kept hearing about South Korea, and they had a very tough time at the beginning, if you remember. In 8 days, we're doing more testing than they've done in 8 weeks. That's a tremendous turn. And with our testing, it's going exponentially. It's going up, up, up every day. So we're going to be able to do things with this very highly sophisticated testing. And it's also the test itself is considered the best test. So on top of doing now more than anybody else, we have a very high-quality test. That makes a big difference. It also makes a big difference even in terms of opening, because we're going to see those areas like the hot spots. But New York City definitely is a very hot spot.
Steve? When you talk about areas that you could open up, what specifically are you looking at? What states? Are you talking about out west?
Well, you can talk about the Farm Belt. Take a look at the Farm Belt. Take a look at areas out west. Look at big sections of Texas. I was talking to the great governor of Texas. They've done a fantastic job out there, but they have very big sections of Texas where, you know, it's like numerous states, frankly. But we can have large sections of if we want to do it that way, we could have large sections of the country open. I think it's very important that we start moving on that and start thinking about it, because our country wants to be open. Our people want it to be open, and they're raring to go. And I think it's one of the reasons that we're going to have a tremendous bounce back. I think it's going to go very quickly. Also, I want to thank, while I'm here, I want to thank Larry for the job he's done, Steve Mnuchin for the job he's done. If you look at Peter Navarro, he's sort of doing different things. He's really he's a force in terms of getting masks and getting all of the ventilators and all the things. He's been fantastic, Peter. But I also want to thank Congress, because whether or not we're happy that they haven't quite gotten there yet, they have been working long hours. I'm talking Republicans and Democrats, all of them, the House, the Senate. I want to thank Congress, because they are really trying to get there, and I think they will. And I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Did you give Governor Cuomo a call?